This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN?
Oh,
what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits: enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform: Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy.
You are listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 248, brought to you by Discount Comic Book Service and iFanboy listeners like you. Hello and welcome to the iFanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast, episode 248. My name is Connor Kilpatrick and I'm here with Josh Flanagan.
Hello, everyone.
And Jim Mixies Pitalik.
Spawn, everybody.
Oh, it's Jim Murchkowski, one of our writers. How'd you get in here? Oh, right.
Well, they needed some help. Ron is off in Peru or something and nobody's told me, but...
It's August. It's vacation month at iFanboy.
Oh, I see.
I have not been on a vacation.
Just because you had a baby with you doesn't mean it was a vacation.
It was not a vacation. It was a family wedding. Anybody who's been to one of those.
Right. We're out of town, away from the work. It was vacation.
I worked, but I was in like there was no internet or phone service where I was.
All right, regardless, this is August, and it means there's going to be some guest hosts for this show and next week. Right.
Next week, I'm out of here.
Yes.
I'm not thinking about any of you.
Enjoy it. We are ifanboy.com. We like comics. We read comics. Every week, read a bunch of comics.
one of us reads all their comics, picks the best one, writes about it on the website. We talk about it in this podcast, along with other books of the week, other topics of interest. It's fun times.
I don't know why this script has no spoiler warning.
Because you keep using the one without the spoiler warning. So this is your spoiler warning. If you haven't read your books, pause the show, come back. You'll have more fun. You won't get spoiled. You won't write us angry emails. Everyone will be happier. Less stress around the world.
Are people really listening to the Talk About Comic Books podcast and without having read the books?
Jim, why do you think we talk about the spoiler warning? Why do you think we add it to the show?
Thousands of people are listening to this, but the one guy who's never listened to it before comes on and he goes, hey, I want to listen to this. And he goes through it, and all of a sudden his favorite book is ruined right away. He is going to write an email, and I am going to have to spend the time to respond to that email. So by saying this at the beginning, absolved.
Every podcast is someone's first.
Jim, there's a reason why we added it, for real.
I see.
So this week, Josh, you had the honor and the privilege, great honor of having the pick.
This was a tough week. This was not a everything stands out week. This was actually one of those weeks where I read all the books and I rated them as I went through because, to be completely honest, rating them on a 5-star scale as I read them is one of the most fun things that I have in my life.
That's all I have left.
I don't know why, but I love it. I love that
you love to judge. You're a judger.
I love the area between 3 and 4 a lot. I don't think I've ever maybe one.
I wish we had
I was just gonna say when you get the 1-star book, the ability to click the 1 is very cathartic.
Oh, and you
that's all you've got.
You look at it and for a second you're like, well, how come I can't give it no stars? I have to give it at least 1.
So because they tried.
The Century Fallen Sun.
I've only ever given a 1 to that book. That's the only book I've ever given a 1 to.
I think it might be among the only a couple of 2s actually. Also,
I'm very sparing in my 5-star ratings, but I'm very generous with 1-star.
I think I grade on a curve. Like in a given week, I do a 5. And when I looked at all the ones that I had done this week, I gave Chew number 5 a 5, or Chew number 13 a 5. And I don't think anything else. Maybe one other 5. And then I sort of looked at them and I thought, oh, well, like that very clearly was. And then you start to enumerate why you start thinking about it. Why would that be pick of the week? And then I did. I go, well, that's – wow, that was pick of the week. Chew number 13, fresh off its Eisner win as emblazoned on the cover. And inside the letters column, there's a very fuzzy low-res picture of the Eisner that has been printed in there.
Best new series.
It's almost like all the other issues. It's a little difficult to say what it was about this one that was better because they all sort of have the thing where they'll start off either with a flashback or with a thing going on and then go back to the beginning. They hook your attention right away. But as I went through it, what I did realize is that there are layers and layers and layers that keep being added. It's kind of interesting that there are only – A, I feel like the book's been around longer than it has. I feel like it's more than 13 issues.
I agree.
And it's fun. Like and then the other thing is you've got this again, I was realizing I was reading this issue, you have a really wide cast of characters. And they're all very distinct from one another. And I find that a lot of fun. You've got Tony Chu, but you also have his partner, and you have his new girlfriend, Amelia Mintz, and you have his old partner, Mason Savoy, and then you have this new guy, what's his name? Caesar, whatever.
Caesar Maldonado or something like that.
Valenzano.
Whatever. They had an O at the end.
Racist. There's no O?
Who was that?
I don't know. You've thrown me off completely with your high-pitched racist.
He's got a lot of people in the book, and they seamlessly come in and out of the story, which really works.
I think that's one of the things about this book is it sort of feels effortless.
And I think the reason it feels like it's been around longer is because he's so seamlessly he's created an entire world down to the last thumbtack on the bulletin board without making it look hard.
Mm-hmm.
It's a world unlike any other book, too. I think that's one of the best things.
Yeah,
and that's, no other book is like this book.
It's completely fresh for several reasons. For one, it's just the mad ideas that are coming out of John Layman's head and being interpreted by Rob Guillory. And one of the things that makes this issue special is I think it's just Rob Guillory getting better.
Yeah.
Not that he was bad, but just the more he's getting comfortable with his world and he's not worrying about having to design everything, like it's just getting more effortless and more fun to it looks like it's fun. Like you can see pages on here and he does little visual jokes and you can look at the page and think that if you were the artist you would look at that page afterwards and be like, yes, I got that.
Right.
The page that shows Montero Industries and they're just going down and pushing in a little bit each camera. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 panels horizontal, and the last one is this absurd looking frickin'. Like, that's just, that page is a win.
Mm-hmm. I prefer Chog.
one thing we should mention is in the letters column they said that they're now assured there's going to be a full 60 issue run in the book, which is
That which means that they do have an end in mind, which is
we've known he's had a story, but he says now because of the sales and all the thing going with the book, they're assured now they're going to get the whole series out. So that's a good win for everyone, including the comics industry. That's nice to see. But it sort of involved with what you said with the story is one thing I like about Chew is that it plays a lot with the structure of comics. I like the constant title cards show you something new or explain something.
That's something that I mentioned in the review is that, and I want this to be clear. I hope you don't skip over this just because you don't read the book or anything, but this is part 3 of 5. This is issue number 13 in the series. You could totally start reading this comic with this issue.
Yes, you could.
Yeah.
I mean, it may be fun to go back and read the ones before it, but you could totally start with this issue, and I think that is a feat. That is pretty good to do.
Yeah, they don't really do it that way so much anymore.
Yeah. So the story, just in case you haven't heard and you don't know what it is, the story of Chew is it's a world where there was the bird flu, but instead of it not fizzling out, it spread into a pandemic, supposedly, and chicken was outlawed. And now what I like about that is John Layman, the writer, looks at the world and says, what would happen if chicken was outlawed? And then you've got all these interesting things that would actually happen. Because as you said in your review, everyone eats chicken almost. You know?
Yeah.
So what would happen if you take a staple of almost everyone's diet out? And that there's a lot of repercussions. And that's part of the fun of the book is figuring out what would happen exactly. And this issue, we have a dastardly corporation coming up with the frickin', which is a frog that's crossed with a chicken. And technically speaking, legally, it's not a chicken.
That looked like chicken to you?
No, but it tastes close enough to a chicken that people are now going crazy, and Montero Industries is making lots of money. But now, as part of this investigation, Chew is finding out maybe that Montero Industries knew about the bird flu before the bird flu happened. Maybe that means there was no bird flu. Maybe that means it was engineered, or what's going on. But this is a whole other layer of mystery now.
It's a very filthy company.
Yeah, well,
the factory's quite even. And also, it's in no way related to Monsanto. Who's not a corporate underwriter for the show.
But this book is so much fun. And you mentioned Guillory. There's a panel on every page that just looks like he had such a good time drawing it.
And every piece of paper on every person's desk has something funny written on it. Every background character has an expression on his face that some thought has gone into. It's full of detail and throwaway stuff. Like, there's a random panel in there where like they go into his girlfriend's office and they just mention, you know, that guy who writes the sports column gives us a dirty look every time we come in here, and it has nothing to do with anything.
But
they just cut to this guy scowling at them. Right, it probably will. But
that panel really made me laugh.
Yeah. He's just sitting at his computer.
It was the evil baby from The Simpsons. That's what it made me think of. Or the evil monkey from Family Guy, because if The Simpsons did it, the Family Guy has to. Oh, right. That's a flame. That is. Like behind – I don't know the partner's name. I can't think of it. John. But behind him, at one of the in the FDA, there's like a headline that says FDA kicks baby in baby face.
It's a fun comic, but it's also violent and bloody. There's a big old violent bloody fight in the beginning, and there's good stuff with relationships and how complex his character, his John Chu's partner, is secretly gay, and so is his boss, and they're having an affair, and only Chu knows about it, so he can get stuff out of that. And there's a lot going on here, and there's a lot happening as well as the fact that it's a really fun, not whimsical, but there's a lot of whimsy in it.
The quiet tension, the tension between the boss, like the three of them. Mm-hmm. You know, when the boss comes in to yell at Chu because he hates Chu. I forget why he even hates Chu at this point, but he just does. It's a fact of life now because it's one of those cop show standards that the boss hates. And just like the acting in the eyes on John Chu and the way that he just makes the boss just seem to vibrate with rage just a little bit more in each panel. He's choking it down and chewing it down. And it's just so much fun.
It really is. It's one of my favorite books. It's one of the best books out there. They just put out a big, a big edition of the first 12 issues, I think it was. Mm-hmm. It was called something.
The Omnivore edition, I think.
The Omnivore edition. If you're at all interested in the book, that'd be a great pickup. I think Chew's fantastic, and I'm happy it's going to be around.
Me too. But and this was a really fun issue. Like I said, you could start with this issue. At the very least, you could read it and you'd be like, "Oh, that is fun. I want to go back and read more." And I swear, it's totally worth it.
Now, it's funny. We've been loving Thunderbolts, and I love Thunderbolts as much as anybody. But this issue, I didn't really like as much as the other ones. I don't know why. I think it has to do with the fact that it was sort of half Avengers Academy, and it wasn't strictly a crossover because apparently it was sort of a parallel crossover. Right. But it still felt weird. It felt off, and I didn't really enjoy it as much as the other ones.
I was thinking that right up until the fighting started. And then the last third of the book I thought was so much fun and so satisfying. And the best panels of the week, I have that picture of John Walker jumping out of his chair. And as soon as I saw that, I was like, that's the best panel of the week.
There it is.
But
I did the same thing.
I went through the next few pages and I saw about five others. You know, like, and the way that it was structured, the top third of the page is Walker's fight, and the one under that is Songbird's fight. And then Luke Cage beating the snot out of the Purple Man, which in Marvel terms, that's a big fight.
Yes.
Actually, he didn't beat up the Purple Man. He beat up the Purple Man's.
No, guys. He did. He crushed him with his headbutt.
At the end, he hits him in a way
look
that
look at his face
reconfigures his skull forever. But yeah, they kept a lot of plates spinning in that.
You got me. Come on, who you got? Say it. Say my name. I'm the Power Man, Luke Cage.
I agree. I didn't know how it was going to work at first because they ended the last one on a cliffhanger and then began this one as if it had already been resolved. And
I kind of love it when they do stuff like that.
And I appreciated it, but I just thought, how are they going to do all that and deal with this Avengers Academy thing at the same time? But they got every ball into every pocket and went about their business.
I agreed with Connor and I was with you the whole time. And then I just had so much fun at the end that I kind of forgot about it.
No, I think the fight was great. The last couple of pages are fantastic. The three-way fight scene is great, but I just up until then I was just kind of like, the tone's all off.
Yeah,
I like the way. I mean, I like the way it showed that there was a new sheriff in town on the raft.
Yes,
not only one of the many things it accomplished was it walked you through how the new Avengers number one with the Electro outbreak is never going to happen again on Walker's watch. From a continuity nerd standpoint, I sort of appreciated that too.
Mm-hmm. Now, Jim, are you reading Avengers Academy? Is that you?
I am, and I brought it up for this podcast because I thought if I didn't bring it up, it wasn't going to get brung.
That's true.
and I've noticed that it's at least from a Twitter standpoint, it's like the stealth hit of the heroic age. I see a lot of people talking about how, you know, out of all these new Avengers books, the one I like the most is the one with the nobodies in it.
I believe I like Thunderbolts is the stealth hit of the...
Oh, yeah. Okay. Fine. I'm not going to...
Just saying. Quip.
We will kick you right off the show.
No. I mean, it's not like I've got a pendant here.
We have an ejector seat button.
No. Well...
We've installed in all of your chairs.
I know. I signed the documents when I got here. But Avengers Academy is kind of nice. I'm still kind of... It knows its way, but I'm sort of finding its way right now a little bit. But basically, the premise of it is that Hank Pym and Tigra and some other Tigra and some of the other guys, Quicksilver, have gotten this group of people, kids who were in the Initiative together, because they tell them that they're grooming them to be the next generation of Avengers. But the kids find out in very short order that the reason Hank and everybody else are keeping an eye on them is because they're the ones that they think are most likely to become supervillains, basically. So they're kind of
concept.
Yeah, they
I
wish they
I had
they,
known that I may have been more likely to buy it.
Right. They well yeah, but, it, yeah I think it
and
was
I would
revealed
have been that, complained that they told me that and
right, yeah, spoiled and, but yeah, so basically these kids find out unbeknownst to their instructors, they find out that they're not exactly being groomed, they're being watched and in this issue of Avengers Academy, where they're kind of given a scared straight tour of the raft, where they talk to some of the Thunderbolts and kind of
learn about vibrators.
Yes, learn about vibrators from Valkyrie, in a book that is rated A, which for Marvel means ages 10 and up. Nice prison rape
you
reference.
You can't
too.
Start too early teaching about vibrators.
Right, I guess
well,
not.
To love thyself.
Right. This is the greatest love of all. Whitney taught me that. But anyway, when they realize they're going to the raft, a lot of the kids in Avengers Academy are the way they are because Norman Osborn screwed them up. You know, like he promised them that he would make them useful and help them control their powers, but instead he made a lot of their powers worse because that weaponized them. Mm-hmm. So basically, long story short, they realize that he's in the raft and they're the ones who caused the power outage so that they could go down to Osborn's cell and kill him.
That was the problem with the Thunderbolts thing, is yeah. they didn't explain very much of that. I mean, I got it, but it just was
very tricky. They're both written by the same person, if I'm not mistaken. And no, I think what he's trying...
No, oh, Jeff Parker doesn't write. Does he write Avengers Academy?
Christos Cage.
Maybe. Oh, you're right. I get those guys mixed up all the time. I apologize to both of you.
You don't apologize to us. Oh.
No. But, yeah, I think what they were trying to accomplish was a non-crossover where, like, you didn't feel obligated to read.
It wasn't bad, but I don't think it worked out quite. It was things were missing. Yeah.
I appreciated the effort, to be honest.
Yes. No, it was nice to have... and not be like a continuing Adventures of Academy 3, a book I don't read, you know.
Yeah,
but
right.
If this is how it has to happen, that's fine. It's better than the alternative.
Let me ask you this. Has the book proffered any explanations or excuses for Hank Pym's outfit?
Oh, my God. Not only have they not, I took a look at it in this one, and I had to put the book down. I was laughing so hard.
Really awful.
It's like,
this one came about in the Mighty Adventures, in the one that Slott was working for a while. Yeah, he's the new Wasp.
This one has his casual wear or something in it. Like, it's not his Wasp costume, and it's like this Sergeant Pepper Jedi kimono. And I was like, what in the hell is that? Are those epaulets? So, I mean, I can't vouch for costume design.
I mean, I understand that we're all equal and everything, but I don't want to be my wife's old girl character.
Yeah, well,
he's a tribute to her because she died.
That's right.
Didn't he kill her? No, she didn't. He didn't kill her.
So, no.
Josh, the odds-on favorite in Vegas and around the world was Ex Machina number 50 for Pick of the Week.
Yeah. I gave it a 3.
Now, wait a minute. Before you talk about it, tread lightly. I'll come to your house and beat you with my Ex Machina hardcovers that I'm reading.
Okay, because you're not there. Jim, do you read this at all?
I switched to trades back during the era when the wait for trades and the wait for issues weren't really that different.
Uh-huh.
If you know what I mean, like he took his time for a while. Nothing you're going to say is really going to spoil the enjoyment of the story.
There's
is it?
The thing at the end. If you don't have it spoiled for you,
I haven't heard anything. I will kill you.
Basically, there's a thing at the end that happens that's sort of a big reveal. And it is very much in keeping with the first issue, if I want to think about it in that way.
The first issue opened with him confessing to somebody, right?
That's remember, but the end of the first issue was a shot of the two World Trade Center towers.
Yeah.
Or the one.
Issue was a pick of the week.
Right, and it was. So I would have liked to pick this as a nice bookend. But it was very much a talky issue where Mitchell was just sort of talking to himself in his office after all of this had happened. By several years.
Was it like an epilogue?
A little, but it just... I don't know. I mean, like, it worked when he did the same thing in Why the Last
Why?
Man.
Why? That's exactly what I was just thinking.
But there was the end of Why the Last Man had he was telling the story of the stuff that happened, and they'd rocketed you into the future, and all of the details of that were more interesting. In this, I was a little confused because he was like, there was a dream sequence with demons and all sorts of stuff because of the stuff that I don't know how far you guys are, but there's a whole thing where his version of the power is one of several other versions of the power. Like, he does machines and somebody else does animals and somebody does plants or whatever. And it's supposed to be like the foretelling the coming of these other dimensional evil people who are going to enslave humanity or do whatever. And so there's like these dream sequences in it that show that future. And for a second, you think that that's what it is. And it didn't feel like part of the book. Like, I think like the overall story doesn't need that. It felt
the draw was always not the superhero stuff. It was the politics and the interpersonal relationships.
Yeah, it's not really about superheroes.
And some of the interpersonal relationships are dealt with in this and some aren't. I just feel like he shoved it into issue 50 too soon. I feel like the end could have been drawn out a little bit. We've been moaning a little about Tony Harris in the last few issues, and I didn't really have a problem with this. I thought it looked pretty good. it was done on this. If you like the very, this is really interesting. At the very beginning, there's a little thing on the first page next to the indicia that says Sustainable Forestry Initiative Certified Fiber Sourcing. And so the whole book was on this sort of different paper, which was interesting. It wasn't that glossy paper. And maybe it's always been like that, but I'm really noticing it now, and I've never seen that little thing before.
Wasn't there an annual or something about that exact topic?
Maybe. And then finally, there's two things that happen at the end. One of them I really didn't like. It just seemed really out of character, and it was him trying to make Mitchell Hunt. If you've read it, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. A character dies, and it just seemed out of place. It didn't sit with me right, and maybe that's because it was supposed to be uncomfortable. But it's is this about a hero? Is this not? But at the last minute, you can't make him not a hero. I don't know. And then finally, the very last page, actually second to last page, is a reveal about what happened and where 100 ended up. And it makes sense. It's jarring and it's weird at first, but it makes sense. And it also is in keeping with the beginning of the book. But overall, it was okay. It wasn't a bad ending, but it really wasn't the thing I was looking for so much.
I'm not totally surprised. I mean, he's not been giving. I'm not going to say what he's been doing, but he's been busy.
And I miss that.
So as a swan song in comics.
Yeah, it's pretty rough. And the thing is Vaughn is first and foremost really good at a first. He's one of the best first guy issues there ever has been.
First issue guys.
And he's been pretty good with last issues. If you remember, Wire, the Escapists, or a bunch of other things, I had a little Doctor Strange mini, tons of stuff. And so it wasn't great. I'm glad that it finished. I'm glad they got to do the whole thing. It's an excellent series. It really is. It's a wonderful series. But it was okay. It was an okay ending. I wanted to like it more, and I think that my expectations were probably higher, which didn't help.
Were you looking forward to it? I mean, when Y was coming to an end, people were going bonkers, and this.
No, it's been because
it doesn't have the cachet of Y.
It doesn't have the cachet of Y, and also it didn't have the schedule of Y.
Yeah,
it really started not coming out, and
that's why I went to the hardcovers.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
I just bypassed the trades and went right to the hardcovers because who knows when they were going to come out.
And that's the problem. Like it very much like it fell off the radar. And the other thing is like to me, all of this was a signal that one of the best and my favorite writers in comics has abandoned comics. And I don't mean that in a bad way. He's allowed to do whatever he wants. I don't blame him for going somewhere he's actually going to make money and doesn't have to hustle every single moment of his life. I get that, but it sucks.
Yeah.
So that's that. Finally.
Well, that's too bad.
Over in another world of things that I think only I read. No, Jim, you read Fables and Issues?
I do. I do read Fables.
Second, Connor.
I have switched back and forth from issues to trades and back again with Fables because the build up to what I thought would be the end of the book was so exciting I couldn't bear to wait for the trades anymore, and then it stubbornly failed to end, and now I'm back on issues.
You could have ended there.
Yeah.
I find myself in and out of interest with this sort of new paradigm that's going on. But I liked this issue a lot.
The new villain that they've set up is absolutely spine-tinglingly terrifying, and it would be nice to see him again one day.
Yeah. And I really like the dynamic of here's your big spoiler, I guess, if you are not knowing what's going on. But I really like the dynamic of Geppetto living among the fables and sort of the conspiracies and things that are happening among them as things sort of start to fall apart.
Now it's like they always had this adversary, and now that they don't really have him anymore, they've started to lose cohesion.
Yeah. And then the Rose Red has always been a fairly interesting character, and it's interesting in 97 issues here in is the first time that we actually see her past, and it's one of those things where they show her past. It's kind of a no holds barred kind of thing, like, oh, she's horrible.
Yeah,
like she did really bad things. But that's one of the really interesting things about Fables is that they all had to sign that compact, so whatever horrible things they did in the past don't matter anymore. So a lot of these characters are very, you know, they have various shades of moral ambiguity about their pasts, I guess.
And Rose Red had a habit of using her power and her beauty to get men to fight over her, and she broke up people's marriages for no reason at all. She broke up people's marriages because they said nice things to her. Like I was reading a scene. Yeah, I was reading that scene. There's a scene in the royal court where this guy stands up and like proposes a toast to Rose Red, and she insinuates that he and her, and she had had an affair, even though they've never, you know, even been alone together or whatever. And it was just one of those things. All I could think was, if I was in that court, I would never make eye contact with that woman, much less race.
The other side of it was the sort of ridiculousness of the chivalry that was going on. Like, if you challenge a man to a duel, he must accept, even though it's ludicrous.
Right.
That's the way you did it back then.
I know.
When men were men and they wore fancy pants.
Idiots. Pantaloons. But I think she's a really good character, and I like this position where she was in charge of the farm and then she just lost her shit and slept for like 15 issues.
Right.
Really, it was a good issue. I had fun with it, and it's like I'm like, I want to know what happens next. I am excited to read this. I feel like it's been delayed a little. I feel like I haven't been reading.
I actually looked it up. I noticed that it had sort of ceased to exist for a couple of months there, but it's.
I feel like it's a book that's not talked about like it used to be.
I think once it changed, a lot of people's feelings got weird on it. It is good, but it's been around such a long time.
Sure, it's not to say people don't like it. Just it used to be a book.
I will say
3, 4, or 5 years ago, it got talked about all the time, and now I never hear anybody talk about it.
I will say Buckingham really is still at the top of his game on this. This is a really nicely drawn issue by him.
It is.
Has he been doing almost the whole series?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, they'll do an odd fill in every well not a fill in but like a guest artist every once in a while.
Like David Lapham came on and did 2 issues, and that'll sort of cover the spread for him.
Right.
Back to superheroes. I keep wavering between which Avengers book is my favorite, and it seems to change every week depending on the issue. And this week I had a lot to choose from. And right. I chose New Avengers number 3 was my pick of the week and my favorite Avengers book at the moment, mostly because it was a tour de force for Stuart Eminem and Wade Von Grabadger and Laura Martin. I thought
Eminem was the only reason I was buying that book.
The art in this particular issue was just gorgeous, and I loved how they played with the color, which is a Laura Martin thing. When with Iron Fist off in the dimension and everything's washed out and it's bright, and there was a lot of stuff with the sky being red, so everything was colored red. I thought it was just a gorgeous issue.
Tom Caters wrote an article on iFanboy.com this week about the tendency to value the writer and sort of neglect the artist. And it got me to thinking about, you know, I would follow Brian Bendis on just about anything he wrote, regardless of who was drawing it. And I couldn't think of an artist who I would follow no matter who was writing it. And if I had one, it would probably be Eminem. So obviously I'm like a pig in slop with this book. But that having been said, I'm still kind of tentative about the direction this story is going in. And Connor, did you find that they're weirdly? I mean, I know they've saved the world 1,000 times over between them all, but do you find they're weirdly not emotionally invested in the fact that hell is springing up out of the sky?
No, I think for that reason, that's why I don't because this is what happens to the Avengers. You know, it's kind of like this day another day at the office.
I'm still thinking about the last issue when, like, Brian Bendis wrote a very funny set of dialogue between Spider-Man and Wolverine, but Spider-Man thought that Wolverine had stabbed Doctor Strange to death, and I thought, you know, given what I know about Spider-Man and all the angst that has been in his life over people dying and it's his responsibility to save, like, if he thought that Wolverine had actually stabbed Doctor Strange to death, I don't know that this conversation would be going this way. And it's not a complaint. I mean, it's written the way that Brian Bendis has always written these characters, and it's been one of my favorite books for a long time, but it just sort of, it gave me pause last month, and I still haven't shaken it off yet.
Interesting. Well,
stunning everyone to silence. My plan is working.
I'm digging the way that every Avengers book is a different kind of story. This is much more magic based as opposed to the pure adventure of the Avengers book, the espionage space aspect of the Secret Avengers. So I like they're all different, and they're all different flavors of the Avengers, and I like this one a lot. It's one of the best ones.
There's something for everybody.
I got there and I looked at it and I couldn't remember which ones I wasn't buying, so I didn't buy it.
Right.
I'm off Avengers for a while. I'll come back renewed when I feel like it.
I have this problem with the Hulk books right now. Oh. I like one of these. maybe when they're collected, I'll remember which one.
I'm amazed there are so many. Is there a new Hulk movie coming out? What's going on?
Right.
Let's talk about you and us. If you want to help iFanboy, if you like this stuff, if this is part of your comic book life and your comic book life is very important to you, then there's all sorts of things that you can do. to help out if you listen to this show and you like all the free content or the video shows or the stuff on the website, like the article that Jim was talking about that Tom wrote. That was really good, too. Got passed around a lot. It was good stuff. You can click on the banners on the site, first of all, right away. Those are the people who sponsor us. That's one of the most direct ways to support the people who support us. You can go to ifinbo.com/Amazon, and there's a little button there that says Powered by Amazon. If you click on that, it's going to take you to Amazon.com. Completely honest, so it's going to look just like normal Amazon. If you're going to buy something there, you can actually bookmark that as your little Amazon bookmark, and then we get a little piece of the things you buy there. It doesn't cost you a thing. It's a very innocuous way to help out. You can get the shirts. You can get the Fear Agent shirt. I was wearing my Fear Agent shirt today as I rode my bike in 90-degree heat in a black shirt. Not a great choice.
I wore my Power Responsibility shirt just the other day.
There you go. Or finally, you can be a member. A member is an extra special person in the iFan base who's decided that this is the kind of thing that they want to support with a little bit of a monetary contribution, and that there's really like if this is important to you and you think that you can throw one issue of a comic book worth of money towards us a month to help support what's going on, or some people do $10, so $4 a month or $10 a month or $42 a year or $100 a year, then that's like just a way to contribute in a really good way. But we're also going to give back to the people who are members, and we're giving away all sorts of stuff, and you're eligible for all of those contests. And we're giving away a lot of stuff, so your odds are relatively good. But if you do become a member, you will get a pack with some stickers and buttons, a comic book, and I really think it's like a badge of honor to get the most awful comic book you can. At this point, and a t-shirt. We're going to be having some updates on that, I think, soon.
Yeah, we're going to have we got giveaways happening for the next 3 months. We're going to probably have a new t-shirt coming soon. Mm-hmm. All kinds of stuff. You're going to be excited. Some other things that'll be worth your while to be members.
But the thing is, like the members, you guys make this, because really without you, we would have been gone a long time ago. And so thank you very much to all the people who are going to be members. We still need more because it's important. But thank you, everyone. And look into that at ifanbo.com/store. Thank you. Back to the business.
Couple of quick ones. Wolverine Weapon X number 16, which is the final issue of Wolverine Weapon X, Jason Aaron, sort of boutique Wolverine book that nobody bought because it didn't matter.
That's a pity.
Ended on a weird note. The art from David Gianfelice was good, but not really good for this particular story. He had some very weird character models for the main characters. He gave a flock of seagulls haircut to Angel, and Wolverine sometimes looked like he weighed 90 pounds. It was just, he's a good artist, but not particularly for this character.
Northlanders.
Yeah, I knew I heard the name from somewhere. He's good. Uh-huh. Definitely good, but just didn't. He had weird character models. Basically, this was a one shot where Nightcrawler died in the Second Coming story, and this was his will got read, and he had a task for Wolverine to complete, and this was Wolverine completing his task. And it was nice because they've got a nice relationship, and there's a lot of flashbacks to their time together. And it was a really nice wrap up to the story, which was a really strong book. One of my favorites from Marvel in the last year. Number two, Batman Beyond. Number three, that doesn't make any sense. I never saw the cartoon. I've only seen the movie, so I don't know a lot about the Batman Beyond world.
Really?
And I'm it happened when I was in my 20s. I was out getting drunk and meeting girls.
You've watched a lot of stuff.
It was the same problem I had with the Justice League shows. It came out when I was in my 20s, and there was no DVRs back then. So I don't know a lot about the world, and I'm enjoying this book. The only weird thing I have, which is totally a weird fan nitpick, is I don't understand none of the ages make any sense. Because it's in the future and all these characters have sort of aged, but it seems like they've all aged differently. You know, like in this issue, you know, Bruce oversees the young Batman, and Barbara's the commissioner of police, and Tim Drake showed up briefly. He was in the movie. And then at the end, we see Dick Grayson. That was the big reveal, because I don't know if we've seen Dick Grayson in this world yet, or maybe we have. I just don't know. But he's the big reveal at the end. But they all look like they've aged differently. Like some of them look really old, some of them don't. And it just doesn't. I'm just trying to figure out how far in the future we were with this, but it doesn't make any sense.
I hate asking this. Is it an incontinuity book?
It's in continuity with the Batman Beyond world, yes.
Okay.
It's one of the Earths.
Yeah. No, it's not like. If you believe Batman 700, it's the future. But
it's like anything else.
The future is unwritten.
That's fine.
But that was
always
the only thing
in motion, is
because I don't know enough about it. And maybe somebody who's seen the show can educate me in the comments about how far in the future this is supposed to be, and why Jason Todd, why Tim Drake looks so much older than Dick Grayson, and why Batman is not.
Well, he's been through a lot more.
Yeah, I don't know. It just
a lot of stress.
Grayson looked like Nick Fury. He had an eye patch. It was actually kind of cool.
Are you guys both still reading G.I. Joe Origins?
Yes, this was a great issue.
It wasn't this whole Zartan 3-part series has been fun.
Yeah, some of my G.I. Joe enthusiasm has wavered, but not mostly for the main book.
I Origins find it comes and goes.
Yes.
Yeah.
The main book got kind of boring, and then it got good. And Origins sort of depends on the strength of its character, I guess.
Right.
I love how they switch between villains and Joes, though. I think that's fun.
Yeah.
But the whole 3 issues, it was very fast moving.
Yet another occasion where they have to take the ludicrous toy and make it into a plausible puzzle piece in this world.
You know what? Good on them.
Yeah.
Terrifying. I mean, they really play with the idea of what if you have this evil sociopathic killer and he can look like anybody. How scary would that really be? And how dangerous would he really be?
I think it was interesting that that it's not really him, but a clone of him.
Yes.
I think that was a really interesting aspect to it, too.
And also the fact that he's working for Cobra Commander, or Cobra Commander wants him to work for him because he's the only man on Earth who's safe from Zartan because no one knows what he looks like.
Right.
And you can never impersonate him. I just think it was very scary and sort of thrillerish, and I like that.
It was. Yeah. It was good. I mean, they've been and it's endless. They can just keep doing this.
Sometimes it's a military, you know, sort of procedural. Sometimes it's a horror. It can be almost whatever they want it to be because they have such a wide range of outlandish characters to choose from. Although if they do Raptor, I'm out.
No, they have to. They just did Croc Master.
And they did. They did Nemesis Enforcer, and they did Serpentor, and they made those guys scary. So this, I mean, they can do anybody, I think, at this point.
Awesome.
Six Gun.
St. Louis.
Right. That's not the whole reason I brought it up, but it is some. I guess anybody else? Six Gun?
Sure.
Of course.
Oh, okay. I didn't know if anybody was reading it but me.
Oh, no, yes.
I
listen to the show.
No, well, I can't remember this ever coming up before.
It comes up, but all 3 issues will come up now. Thanks.
All right. I'll take my medicine.
Appreciate the support.
I'll take my answer off the air.
He's not a member either.
Oh, for Christ's sake. It's about time I start to contribute to this site.
Well played.
Cullen Bunn is the author. I met him not too long ago. He shops, I think, at my store. I would buy this book even if I hadn't met him. It seemed like it'd be right up Josh's alley. You know, you've got post-Civil War, group of ne'er-do-wells picking up the pieces. You've got six cursed or enchanted or supernatural pistols and an undead Confederate general who's trying to reclaim his from some poor girl who's gotten mixed up in all of it. I must confess that for the previous 2 issues, I wasn't quite sure what I was looking at, but issue number 3 is the one where they finally sat the relatable character down and explained to her and therefore us what the hell was going on.
I thought the splaining was well-timed.
Yeah, they might not have had me for too much longer if they didn't tell me what the hell was going on. So yeah, it's well drawn and
Brian Hurt's doing some of the best work in a long time.
It's really nice looking,
well colored too.
Yeah,
yeah, and basically it's one of those below the radar books from Oni that if you don't tell your shopkeep to pre-order it for you, you may never see it as long as you live. But it's well worth your time. And it could be the next Chew if we all got behind it. So, who knows?
Well, I hope for that. Finally, in the area of little books that could, Connor said, you should read CBGB. You'll like it. And I'm guessing you hadn't read CBGB 2.
That's correct. You're right on the money for that. It was rough.
Yeah. You know what? Ron said the same thing. I gave it 5 stars. And here's why.
That's what makes this so great.
That shit was crazy.
It was crazy. I really liked the first story. Uh-huh. If it had just been the first story, I would have given it a 5. The second story was a little out there.
I thought I didn't like the second story until I got to the end of it, and I was like, you know what? That shit was weird. And I've got to give it up to that being weird. Like, I'm going to try to explain this very quickly. Audience, this was drawn by somebody from a band. And if you know who the band is, then it'll make sense to you.
And let's just tell everybody that CBGB was a punk club in New York, very famous. And these are all stories. It's an anthology series. It's all old stories that take place in and around or through this club.
Now, I've never been to CBGB, but I know that Ron has talked to us a lot because he likes to be like, I'm so cool because I was totally there. But when he talks about what the bathroom was like,
Yes.
I thought that they nailed that. And I was looking for it because there's a scene in the bathroom in that first story. I thought that was really good. Yes. And then the second one is just crazy shit. Girl goes into the audience and there is a band playing and screaming and then her ears explode. And then this is not for kids, this portion. Someone yells out, "Ear pussies!" And I guess that's kind of what was drawn on the side of her head, these giant inflatable ear pussies. And the music goes into them and she's very happy about it. And it was just wacky.
They had music sex with her ears. That's yeah. It's a metaphor, I understand. It was just crazy.
Wait, yeah. I'm not sure I get it.
I thought it was funny.
Did you read the first issue? Because that one was
no,
really.
I hadn't yet. I will.
Yeah, that was really good. Yeah. That was better. But this was fun. I mean, I like the first story a lot about the writer who finds her muse through the club and becomes a music journalist instead of a novelist. That was a good story.
It's so anthologies are such a hard sell.
It's just two, even if it's you're just two stories.
Yeah. Two per issue.
It's just, you know, if it's a different artist and a different writer and a different set of characters every time. I guess this is a mini.
Mm. Yeah, so yeah, I think it's a 4-issue mini.
Yeah. Yes. I forget. I don't know.
Yeah.
Someone.
Yeah. It's nice though. I like, especially if you are all from. I mean, I never went to the club, but I was familiar with it because I grew up here. But
I've known about it a long time. Moving on, we're going to talk about user reviews, and this is what a couple of people in the community had to say about some books. Akamu talked about Boys Highland Laddie number 1. Give the story of 4 out of 5 and the art of 4 out of 5. This, for those of you paying at home, is a sort of offshoot of The Boys, where Wee Huey goes back home. And it's a 6-issue mini, I think. Pick of the week percentage is 0.016. That's not a lot.
I thought 0.16 or 0.016?
No, it's 0.16.
Okay.
And he says, this issue picks up directly after the events of Boys 45, and it fills in a lot of Wee Huey's background stories without resorting to more than a few panels of flashbacks. And where most writers would tell a backstory by having a character gush about their past secrets, Ennis manages to convey a lot of Huey's background by having him be vague or change the subject when important parts of the story are brought up. That is exactly the thing. Actually, I read about half of this and then got distracted and then decided I wasn't interested in it. I gave it 3 stars. And then later I felt bad and I went back and read the rest of it and I was kind of like, it was pretty well done. I dropped off The Boys a long time ago, but I thought Huey's the sort of the most empathetic character out of everybody, and I always liked him, so I wanted to see this. But one of the problems is that it all took place in Scotland, and so Ennis wrote the whole thing phonetically.
Battlefield styly.
Yeah, I have a little trouble with that sometimes. I've made the choice not to do that on things because I just, and this is as good at it as anybody is though, and that's important to know. It's just a taste thing. It was very typical Ennis. Like, I felt like I'd read this kind of thing before. Like, he goes back to see his friends, and one of them has turned into a woman, and then one of them always wears a gas mask, which they don't explain, or maybe they did, and I didn't understand it.
Well. That's my whole problem with The Boys in general. I feel like I'd read it all before, but
it wasn't bad.
I like Ennis as much as anybody. He's great. Storytellers SJK reviewed Darkwing Duck number 3 and gave a story of 5 out of 5 and the art of 5 out of 5 and the pick of the week percentage was 0.55%.
5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5.
And Storytellers SJK says, while nobody's likely to mistake Darkwing Duck number 3 for Day Tripper or anything, this issue does bring some genuine emotion into play by adding to its already strong mix of laugh-out-loud comedy and surprisingly well-done action, some nice little touches of humanity, duck humanity, shrugs, whatever, in addition to a sight gag which brings another beloved Disney Afternoon property into the mix and a rather breathtaking dogfight sequence, this issue finally reveals why exactly Darkwing decided to hang up the old cape and gas gun. It's a smart reason, logical, if somewhat familiar, and getting back to the core idea of family that always has lain in the admittedly still silly heart of the show. And I never saw Darkwing Duck, I don't know, for whatever reason.
No, you're 20s again, I would imagine.
I was a big Darkwing. No, I was a big DuckTales fan, but I never watched Darkwing Duck.
I'm amazed. That seems, if you like DuckTales, anyway.
I think it crossed over when Batman was on. I didn't really, what was the point? sorry, Ted. I caught up with the series late. You guys talked about the first issue, and I read all 3 this week. And this book is awesome.
this has won hearts and minds in a way that I would have sworn was a put on.
No, it's great. The first issue was fantastic. And
so Connor from iFanboy says that Darkwing Duck is the G.I. Joe Cobra of 2010.
Yes, Darkwing Duck is great. First of all, it's a gorgeous book, and we put a panel up on our best panels feature. It's, you know, it's drawn in the Disney animation style, but it's gorgeous.
I'm sitting here right now looking at a review of Darkwing Duck that has the word breathtaking in it.
It really is good. The story is great. It's really, the first issue is all about how he's stuck in a corporate culture, and he's all the supervillains are stuck in corporate culture, and they've all retired and they hate it, and there's a corporation taking over the whole world, and it is really, really, really strong story. It's good. I really liked it. So that's the user reviews. If you want to write a user review, maybe get on the show, you make your pull list every week on ifanboy.com. You rate, review your books. And then if you write good ones, we talk about it on the show. And now we're going to talk about Discount Comic Book Service. They've got a monthly special up to 75% off with 40% off all major publishers and flat rate shipping of $5.95 on all U.S. orders. Buy anything in previews. They've got over 9,000 trade paperbacks in stock. You can track your orders online. It's all available at dcbservice.com. Which, if for that $5.95 on flat rate shipping, is a genius deal if you're going to order like Absolute Editions. Oh my God, Absolute Editions!
Yeah, first email.
I recently bought. This is from Daryl. I recently bought the first Absolute Edition of Planetary, and I'm planning on buying the second. This did bring up a question, though. I've got back into comics in the past 5 years, but I've missed so many great runs. As a student, I don't have much money to invest in every single Absolute Edition of a trade paperback I would like. So the question is, what should be my next seminal run? Morrison's X-Men, Bendis' Daredevil, Alias, Strangers in Paradise, or some other run I might be missing. Thanks a lot. Love the show.
Can I do it? Can I say it? Can I say it?
Sure.
What do you like, Daryl?
You know, here's a couple. That's one question. There's a lot of questions here. He's mixed up. He's calling them Absolute Editions, but he's talking about some omnibuses. He's talking about the Strangers in Paradise omnibus or whatever.
Yeah.
And my first thought is that some people on this podcast, some people have set up a culture in which you must buy the biggest, most quote unquote absolute version of something. And my thought is that if you do not have a lot of money, buy the cheapest version of the book and read as much stuff as possible.
Even if you don't have a lot of money, I don't have a lot of money, but I certainly can buy absolutes. I think you're totally right. You should only buy them if you can afford them, and they're expensive, and you shouldn't be buying stuff you've never read in these big forms.
No, the absolute and the omnibus are a place of honor. They are a trophy.
Yeah, they have to earn it.
Yes, and more to the point, he's saying here that he's missed these runs of these books. So what this man needs is a 25-cent library card.
That's a very good point.
Really,
the thing is, Morrison omnibus, the new X-Men omnibus, they're going to pay hundreds of dollars for them.
Morrison's out of print, Alias is out of print, and Strangers in Paradise is already going to cost you hundreds of dollars. So you're talking about big ticket items that are expensive. Bendis' Daredevil, I think, is the only one that's in print.
I think the first one isn't, though.
What?
Oh, brother.
I think there's two volumes, and the first one's out of print.
So these are all out of print. It means you're going to be paying hundreds of dollars for these.
Even the Howard the Duck omnibus, I had to hunt like a white whale for 2 years.
You've read that book.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. I knew what I was getting into. I have a lot of sentimental value.
So we would say, Daryl, is to pick one of these and find the cheapest option you can. Read it. If you like it, and if you decide it's worth it, then you should hunt down the expensive one.
Save up.
Yeah. But if I had to choose all these, I would say fine. I would do Alias.
As would I.
Yeah. I think out of those. Yeah, but
because Morrison isn't necessarily for everybody. The character Daredevil isn't necessary for everybody.
I'm going to read those, by the way.
Morrison's X-Men?
Yep, I'm going to read them. That's all that I will say for now. Next email. The other day, my wife and I were – this is the email, not me. The other day, my wife and I were on a long drive, and she posed the following question to me. What are the lamest superhero powers? It was a stunning question because mainly I never think about who's a lame-o in the powers department. The only examples I could give her were Dazzler, Jubilee, and Ant-Man. At least these powers are lame to me. So, what do you guys think? Who's got the lamest superpowers, says Ben Lavati, or Neb for my fanboy?
You know, those powers seem lame, but
You are the one who is – I'm sorry.
No, I bet someone who knows about science, who unlike me.
No, not Jubilee. No one.
Because doesn't she control light?
She kind of makes fireworks.
Solid light.
Like sparklers out of her hands.
She could do that inside somebody's mouth or in their head. Yeah. I mean, somebody could figure out there's a way to make any power badass, I think.
Most of the lame powers just have owners with no creativity.
I know. Yeah. I know Connor's answer.
Oh, really? Because I don't know mine.
It's Gambit.
Oh, well, that's just because it's not a lame power. It's just
Gambit's power is lameness. unfortunately.
Gambit charges up objects with energy and throws them. That's not a lame power, but it's just lame that in the 90s everybody had the same power.
What's Cable's? I still can't figure it out.
I don't know what Cable's power is.
At various times, he had whatever he needed. At one point, he had some kind of telepathy. At one point, he had some sort of telekinesis. He's got that Jean Grey blood, you know. Mm-hmm. But I never quite knew either. I had jumped ship by the time Cable's origin came into being, and so
to tie it back to the last email in Morrison's X-Men, his whole thing was the secondary mutation led to people's powers that weren't necessarily action adventure based. So
I'll tell you what, I don't know what the lamest power is, but whatever's happening to that guy Beak, that's pretty close. Like in my the one I would pick is there was a kid in X-Factor back in the 80s. It was like one of the first kids that they tried to help, and his power was that he had like a 6-inch force field around him at all times. he couldn't really turn on and off by himself, which like made eating a problem. And I might be confusing.
I'm gonna go out on a limb for mine, so you go first.
Okay. There was a little character from Kurt Busiek. It was part of a cult.
Oh no,
the Triune Understanding.
No.
And that character was Triathlon, who had the relative strength and speed of 3 athletic men.
Do you know what? Right now, in the book Atlas that you're not reading, he is the centerpiece, and they are trying to rehabilitate his powers.
And that book's been canceled. Why?
they're still trying to rehabilitate Hawkman.
What is the strength? What is the speed of 3 men?
I don't know. It's like,
what does that mean?
It's like 45.
Well, what if it's 3 slow men? Does he have the weight of 3 men? Because then he's going to be slower.
Is it 3 Usain Bolts, or is it 3 guys who are really slow?
I'm not sure. The thing is. Is it just taking the speed that you would run,
multiplying it by three,
or is it taking like sort of the leg strength that you have, multiplying that by 3? And I don't think that leads to 3 times as fast.
Because they always just said he had the strength, speed, and whatever else of 3 men. It wasn't. They never really explained.
Right. Never went into any detail.
Or no, everything was multiplied by 3.
If it's one of the Molina brothers, then he's in trouble. That's baseball. Uh-huh. Mine is going to be Rogue.
Oh, as far
Mm-hmm. Blown your minds, because it's lame for her. She can't touch anybody.
Oh, I see what you're doing. You're flipping the script on us.
Yeah, it sucks. It sucks to have that power. She cannot find love.
Uh huh.
So there you go. That's what I think is lame.
Well, in that way, we're gonna go with Batman.
He doesn't have a power.
I know, that's lame. He probably wishes he had some.
True.
It would make things pretty easy.
He's always grumpy because he can't fly.
That's why he's cranky. He's got to work as hard as at least 3 men.
Well, back in the old days, before he was always brooding and brilliant, he would always be complaining that he was the one without power. So, you know, when he's in Justice,
would say, "Listen, buddy, no one told you had to be here.
Go buy a car and shut up."
And then Aquaman would say, and they'd say, "What?" Because he spoke quietly.
Aquaman would just say, "Whatever keeps the spotlight off me." So if you have an email us into contact@ifanboy.com, and perhaps we'll have a incomprehensible discussion about your job. Because it's starting to get hot. When I turned the air conditioning off before we started. Now it's starting to kick in. Let's do a couple of voicemails before we get out of here. The first one has a familiar question.
Hey, iFanboy. This is Dan from Pittsburgh. I was interested in introducing my dad to some comics, since they seem to be getting a little more sophisticated. As they have been for the past decade or so. He's really into history, so I thought a good historical-based comic would be good. So my question is, what, in your opinion, is the most historically accurate story, comic book, OGN, trade paperback, anything? Thanks a lot. Love the show.
If you go way back, Dan, we did a show on history books. Things in history. There's a bunch of suggestions in there. I want to say it's episode 37. I don't know why I want to say that, but
that was from the ill-fated troika of shows we shot at Ron's kitchen.
Yeah. No, but that had the great G.I. Joe show.
Yes, and also the show where we put way too much makeup on Ron's face and he looked like a ghost.
We haven't used makeup in a long time. Things have dropped off. Anyway, there's a bunch of books in there. Most recently, I think you could go with the Joe Kubert book, Dong Zhuai. That was Book of the Month a couple of months ago. That's pretty well historically researched and accurate.
Or The Nom, for that matter.
The Nom would be a really good one, too. It's not necessarily a true story, but but I think that there's something to it. Now, those are both war books. Another guy that just the name that you should anything that he does is fantastic. He does comics journalism is Joe Sacco. I love Joe Sacco's work. He did a book called Safe Area Garage where he spent time in Bosnia during that conflict, and he did another book called Palestine, and he's done a few since then. Really wonderful stuff. Definitely not the stuff of whatever your dad thinks comics are.
Did the video show mention Rick Geary by any chance?
Perfect. That's what I was about to say.
Yeah, we have mentioned him, not that one though.
Yeah.
Rick Geary did a whole series of books on true crime, but also he's done biographies. He did J. Edgar Hoover and did Trotsky, and he's doing a bunch of – basically, he does history books, mostly in the crime genre, but he's been doing biographies lately, so you can look.
You're another one that showed up on a video show at some point, but it was called Allen's War, a book I really loved about a soldier from World War II and then his life thereafter. It's sort of sold as a war book, but it's kind of not.
And there's even Stagger Lee, which is not historically accurate, but then in the back goes on to explain the ways in which it is not historically accurate.
That was in the show.
Yeah, that was the first one in that show. So those are all some, and there's lots of them. That's the kind of thing that we really like a lot. There's a lot of books that are sort of near history but are not real. Mouse, I guess, is one. You know, that's sort of the obvious one.
From Hell.
That's like From Hell is to history as like JFK is to history, but
hey.
Okay, well,
listen,
they're both real fucking good. Is my point.
Listen. Let's not get started. Let's get to the just move on to the next voicemail before we go down a horrible road and the CIA comes for us.
Yeah, fanboy, this is Sean from New York, or it's actually sunk on the site. I'm calling up about the New York Comic Con. It's coming up. I've only been reading for a couple of years, and I've never been to a con before. Should I have bought tickets already? Also, my girlfriend says she wants to come. She doesn't like comic books particularly, but she likes me a whole lot. Should she come? Will this be a bad time? Will she have a good time? Help me out here, fellas. Love the show.
Yes, you can still buy tickets. I think you have till September 10th and to have them sort of pre-order and come in ahead of time. I just checked the website.
But the earlier the better.
Yeah. They've had issues in the past, but they've really gotten a lot better about it.
No, just in general for the big cons, the earlier the better. You never want to wait too long. I would say let your girlfriend come because the con is not, especially a con like New York. New York is similar, probably the most similar to San Diego, while it's not at all like it, but the most like it.
Yeah,
is that there's a lot to see and do that's not related to comics, or there's just a lot of spectacle to see.
It's just kind of interesting.
She might like seeing people dressed up in costumes. She might like seeing there's occasional, you know, movie stars, people, those kind of things. There's a lot of stuff going on. There's a lot to see and do. I wouldn't, you know.
Then again, if you're just going to stand in line so you can get an email autograph from Dan Slott, then probably not so much.
Yeah, if you're going to walk around and see the sights, that's one thing. But if you're going to be in the booths all the time in line for sketches or things, then she should probably strangle you in your sleep.
Or like sitting in the Marvel panel. You don't want to do that with her. She's not going to want to do that.
It all depends on how much she's actively trying to share your interests and how much she is humoring you.
But, Josh, you had your wife went.
Yeah, she loves going to San Diego. Not so much now that we have to work it. But before that, she was.
Well, she went to New York Con a couple years ago.
Yeah, yeah. It's fun. It is. It's like a big thing. There's all sorts of stuff to look at. There's little stuff to buy everywhere. Not everything is comics. You know, there's just, it's fun. It's a big deal. But, you know, in that way that if she goes with you, then you're probably going to de-comicify your experience.
Yeah.
Does she just not like comics or does she think they're stupid? Right. That's a different.
You don't want to bring her. She's going to be like, the whole time. You don't want
She's just not into it, but she thinks that, you know, she likes seeing the toys and the spectacle or just kind of looking around at interesting things.
Tell you what, it may not be too late to get tickets, but I don't know if you're going to stay in the city by then, but you're going to want to get the hotel reservations if you're going to do that.
Well, he's from New York.
Well, then that's fine. Well, anybody else.
He won't have to worry about bed bugs.
Ooh, I'm not going to the movies anymore.
I know.
I saw that. I was at that theater.
I feel bad for you people.
I was just at that theater. I saw Step Up there with Ron. Same theater. Coincidence? You decide.
Ron is filthy pestilence.
You can leave us a voicemail, 888-FANBOY-326-2697. Keep it short and sweet. Tell us who you are and where you're from, and we'll use it on this show or perhaps the video show or just perhaps for our own amusement.
Listen to it and make fun of you.
Yep.
We'll do it. Don't you think not. Connor, give things away to the people.
We are doing giveaways this month and the next 2 months. We're having lots of giveaways from iFanboy members. And you can only be eligible for giveaways if you sign up for an iFanboy membership. You can check that out at iFanboy.com/store. This last week, we gave away some Scott Pilgrim's merch. This week we're giving away a signed issue of Time Bomb number 1, which was excellent. Time Bomb was written by Jimmy Palmiotti and Justin Gray and drawn by Paul Gulacy. And this was signed. We got it signed for you at the con. We can verify. We saw them sign it. And the winner of this issue is Eric Lee Klingman. Eric Lee Klingman, who sounds like someone who would have shot JFK. Eric Lee Klingman, you've won the signed copy of Time Bomb number 1. You can look for that in the mail soon. I've got it here. I'll slip it in the mail next week. And congratulations. How did Eric win? He was a member. So to get on those memberships, we're going to have some big things, including a gigantic prize coming down the pike, which Josh saw when he was over at my house the other day.
It's big.
Which is a kind of exciting and kind of bittersweet, but we'll talk about that when the time is appropriate. Also coming up, this is episode 248. In 2 weeks, we've got 250. Episode 250 is going to be an all email show. It's going to be our not annual, but every 2 years when we hit the 50s, we do an all email show. We talk about the pick of the week, then we do an all email show for as long as it goes. Episode 150 was 2 hours plus, and it was a wacky time. Ron and I are going to drink. It's going to be crazy. So send us your emails, put 250 in the subject line so we know it's for 250 and not for a regular show. You can ask us about any topic, anything's open. Go back and listen to 150. We were all over the map. We talked about all kinds of different things. So go back and for inspiration. We've had some good ones, but I got to say 150 has brought the better emails so far. So up your game, people. Let's get some good emails coming.
Remember, we're funny.
Yeah, so and it's always better when we go off the rails and Ron and I will be drinking, so it'll be interesting.
Did you just say 150 brought the better email as if you were trying to get the podcasts to compete against another?
I'm trying to get the audiences to compete against each other. Oh, so the people who listen to 150 brought in the better emails so far.
They've become complacent over the past 100 episodes.
Yeah, so we want to get some good emails in there. We've got some good ones. I don't want to get me wrong. We've only had a handful of good ones as opposed to last time.
We're going to start reading the ones from people who just want us to read their independent graphic novel.
So send the emails into contact@fanboy.com. Put 250 in the subject line and send them in. You got to get them in for the Thursday before episode 250. So that's your deadline. Get them in there.
Mondays is usually when we have the Don't Miss podcast, where we talk about a book that comes out that week with the creator. And you can go ahead and point your fingers at me. I failed. there were several options. The thing is, we got to pick a book that's good for people to jump on and read, and then we get those people. And people are busy. That's what I learned. Or they live on the other side of the world. And
I'm telling you, it'd be much easier if you just changed it to the Miss podcast.
We just talk about, like, you can go ahead and skip this book from Blue Water.
Fine. Ouch.
It's the Miley Cyrus.
Yeah, you can skip that one. So hopefully next week we'll have a Don't Miss for you. Maybe we'll try to slip something into the feed if we can come up with something between now and, well, whenever we're recording this in Monday. But probably not. Sorry. When you do shows dependent on guests, you have to have people who have time to do your show.
I can't have Jim fill in for Robert Kirkman, is what I'm saying.
Although, could. I'm working on the impression. It's going to take me a while.
Hey!
Check out iFanboy.com. You can read Josh's Pick of the Week review. You can read Jim's Monday columns, which are always fun and exciting and full of interesting discussion in the comments section. You can read all of our great writers. You can rate and review your books. You can make your pull list. You go to the comics section, iFanboy.com/comics, make your pull list. It's fun. It's exciting. It's really cool to see what books end up there. This week we had a neck and neck for like 3 days where one...
Wait, George Lucas was fighting George Lucas?
Brightest Day and one of the Avengers, I think New Avengers, were neck and neck for 3 days trying to duke it out for the top spot. It was always fun to watch that. So go to fmo.com/comics, make your pull list. It'll be fun. We'll get more of you into there. We know there's more of you listening, so make your pull lists. Every Wednesday we got our video show. You can check that out. We've had 3 weeks of Comic-Con and now that's over with. Congratulations, Josh. You can go to bed now. And I hope everyone enjoyed it. It was really fun to make those shows. We're really proud of them and they were good. If we do say so ourselves. This coming week, we've got Scott Pilgrim. We're looking at all 6 books and we're looking at the movie. The last time we did Scott Pilgrim, we did the first 5 books. This time we're doing all 6 books, the entire series, as well as the film. So you can check that out next week at iFanboy.com or revision3.com/iFanboy.
Ooh, you can email us and we will answer those, like we said, at contact@iFanboy.com, or you can send a voicemail to 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697. The emails today were great. They said their name. They kept it short. They got to the point.
I noticed that, like 25 seconds and so on.
When you do it, and it's a good question, you'll get on, is what I'm saying. Gonna happen.
Yeah.
And don't voicemail us with the stuff that isn't questions like that.
Mayhap.
Yeah, I wish we'd get that. Like, is this Tyrese? If you like us, you want to, one of the ways that you can help is to write a review on iTunes. Just go in and write it about any of the shows we have. Not necessarily just this show, but maybe the Don't Miss show. Don't hold that against us. Or the video show. Maybe you haven't done that, but that's a really good way for people on iTunes to discover it. That's how a lot of you found the show, by say, well, I like comic books, and that comes up there. So the more reviews, the better reviews, the more likely that somebody else will find this. And you know what it's added to your life. Why would you want to deny somebody else that? Let me ask you that, sir.
Indeed. So why hoard it?
Or just
don't be one of those indie kids who's afraid that your podcast is going to get cool.
Want to get big.
That's right.
I will sell out over and over and over again.
Where's Zoltan?
Exactly. Big.
I want to be big.
His name was Josh, so I liked it. That is the show. It was chock full of information for you.
That's right.
What was Zoltan? He was in something.
He was wasn't the G.I. Joe Origins about
it? No, it was in Step Up 3D.
Really?
Yes.
How did I not remember that?
They go to rehearse in an old video game, like, graveyard warehouse in Coney Island, and there's Zoltan. It's pretty awesome. Ron and I giggled. No one else did.
Film quote?
No one else giggled. But right.
You lead a different life than I do.
That was for you. That's not for them, because at no point did you watch and go, oh, snap! That's how you know that the Zoltan joke was for you.
Also, Josh wore a double-breasted suit. It didn't look good on him when he... All right, it's getting hot. I'm Connor. Until next week, I'll always be Connor, but just until next week, I'll talk to you again. Holy crap, I need to turn the air conditioning on. Let's get out of here. I'm Connor.
Jesus. Oh, I should be reading the script? I don't do this every week.
Josh, okay? There it is. Ruined.
I guess we can't have nice things.
We can't have... Well, I have all absolutes. I'm gonna cry, cry, cry. Yeah, I'm the one who's gonna show when no